I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England, Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
Thank you for joining us on our Case Profiles episode. We are so excited to have you, as always, because we just love what we do here, especially on our Case Profiles.
If you guys are not familiar with our mini episodes, our Case Profiles, it is where we tell you guys, as well as each other, about cases of people of color based in New England who we have found just have not gotten the same media attention, attention from law enforcement, media coverage, and we feel like as a result, more often than not, the cases that we cover are unsolved.
Now, today, I will let you know ahead of time, my case is solved, and that's a rarity. It almost never happens.
Mm-hmm.
We always have cases where at the end, we're given phone numbers, we're given emails, we're saying, call this number if you know this or that. Sometimes we don't even have numbers for you to call because they're such small level cases, or there are cases were just so mismanaged by law enforcement. Happens every episode. Honestly, again, the fact that mine solved today is just so bizarre. And that's really sad. And our goals for these case profiles is to really get these stories out there so that this kind of thing doesn't happen as often. And I think that's why it's so important to us.
Absolutely. So if you guys do not know, the way that we do this is I will research a case separately. Liz has no idea the body of my case. She might know who I'm talking about, but she won't know any information more than that. And then same, Liz will do the exact same thing, like pick a name, research. So any reactions you're hearing from us are genuine because we have no idea what the other person has found.
Right.
So any oohs, ahs, oh shit, no way, that's crazy. That's genuine.
Yeah.
And any questions that we ask, etc. So it's kind of cool that we both are hearing it for the first time with you guys.
Yeah. It makes for good storytelling.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're just interesting stories because at the same time, they're all so similar, but they're just so devastatingly different at the same time. It's so bizarre.
Absolutely. And because this is an even number, Liz, you are starting us off.
Well, I'm just so excited for that. And today, while it is solved, still a pretty messed up story. And I'm going to be telling you, Katie, and our listeners, our lovely, lovely listeners, about the murder of Reynaldo Pena. I had a ton of sources today. Wonderfully. I had four. So I used two articles from the New Bedford Guide. I used one from WPRI. And I used another article from WJAR. Let us get into it today. It was around 2:15 a.m. on November 11th, 2018, when a minor case of road rage turned unnecessarily deadly for one young man.
Oh, no.
And we're talking minor. Like, if there's a level below minor, like scant, maybe, it's that. You're gonna, Katie, you're gonna literally be baffled. Listeners, you're gonna be baffled, okay? 23-year-old Reynaldo Pena was driving down Malden Street in New Bedford, Massachusetts, early that cold November morning, not too long ago, when he was stopped due to two cars blocking the road for whatever reason. They were just in the way, or he couldn't, like, there wasn't enough room to just, like, sneak by, whatever. One of those cars, just of note, was a white 2012 Lexus. I don't know what the other car was, didn't say. Annoyed by this because, you know, it's 2:15 in the morning. He wanted to get home. For, you know, I don't know where he was. He might have been at work. Who cares? Whatever. He wanted to get home. So he honked his horn saying like, hey, I'm here. Can you, probably didn't notice me because it's 2 a.m. Probably thought you guys were good for a while, but I'm here. Honked his horn. Can I get by? The other car moved out of the way, not the white Lexus, but the other unknown car moved out of the way and Lexus just stayed put. But luckily that other car moving gave enough room so Reynaldo was able to take his car and drive on through, and that was it. Great. So minor. Solved within one little honk. Good. Fine. And he was on his way home. He was almost home. Like, he was on his street, almost. So he was just going home. For whatever fucking reason, this absolutely pissed off the driver in the Lexus. especially the honking part, that really got him going. So he put his car in drive and began to very quickly tailgate Reynaldo.
No.
Yep. Just for honking, which I thought was kind of warranted. He was there in his way.
My heart sank when you said all he did was honk.
Yep.
I would do the exact same thing. I use my horn often.
Yeah. I mean, what else are you going to do? I don't think these two cars saw him. Yeah. Reynaldo actually had driven only, like, a little ways down Malton Street. He parked on the side of the road near Shawmut Ave and was actually in the process of getting out of his car when the Lexus pulled up. Like, he was in front of his apartment or something. Immediately, 36-year-old Alexis Silva stopped his car and from his car began to fire shots at Reynaldo. Yep. Over honking. I'll be honest. I don't know if it was like, beep, 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 beep. But it very well could have been like, honk. Regardless, that's not something you start shooting at someone for. Absolutely not. The New Bedford police received phone calls at approximately 2:19 a.m. reporting the gunshots. And when they arrived on Shawmut Ave, they found Reynaldo lying in the street. He had been shot several times. Reynaldo was rushed to St. Luke's Hospital, then transferred to Rhode Island Hospital before he unfortunately died from his injuries at around 3:40 a.m. Crazily enough, Alexis Silva, the murderer, he got away from the police. It wasn't long before they knew who he was, but he got away. Surveillance footage showed his white Lexus continued driving like 4 miles after the shooting. He stopped at a home on Bank Street. And then later, witnesses who had, like, been around were able to identify him, like, and verify it through that video. And he ended up being on the run from police for 4 months.
What?
Yeah.
Months?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And then in a crazy turn of events, he turned himself in. I know. Which I was a little surprised about, because he didn't seem like that kind of guy. I wonder if it was because they were closing in on him, or, like, there was like a plea deal or something. I don't know. But he turned himself in after 4 months, which was about early March of 2019. Still pretty recent. Silva went to trial in the summer of 2022. I imagine that, you know, March of 2019, it takes a while to get into trial. And then I'm sure once he was about to, we all know what happened. And then, you know. So he finally went to trial in summer of 2022. He was ultimately found guilty of second-degree murder for Reynaldo's senseless death. He was also found guilty of assault and battery via discharge of a firearm, carrying an illegal firearm, and unlawful possession of a loaded firearm. The attorney general working this case stated after the conviction, and I loved this, quote, "This was a senseless killing over a minor motor vehicle confrontation. However, it is no surprise that the defendant responded in the way he did, as he has a history of committing firearm offenses and violent crimes." Yeah. So I like that this guy was just like, this guy is a predictable motherfucker. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah.
If he's violent and impulsive, and that's his MO, is committing violent crimes with a firearm, wouldn't you think that he would not be roaming the streets with said firearm?
Yeah.
And maybe behind bars?
Yeah, I don't know why he wasn't in jail for these supposed past crimes.
This is what I mean. Yeah. Like, oh my god.
Yeah, it's very, yeah. Well, luckily though, Silva was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 20 years. But hopefully, no person in their right mind would allow him that parole. Reynaldo was well-loved by his family and was known to love baseball and boats. He loved being on the water and was actually a student at the Northeast Maritime Academy in Fairhaven and was supposed to graduate the following year. And he hoped to be a ship captain.
Come on.
That was his dream. And there's this really nice picture of him. It's like the one that's in every article. And it's him on a boat. And he's just like, he's wearing like a, what is it called? He's wearing a windbreaker and he just looks so handsome. He's like you can tell he's on a boat. He looks so good and you can tell he loves it. And it just, oh, it makes me really sad. And he's so young.
Oh my God.
So senseless. least it's solved and his family can have some justice and at least peace, knowing that there is some justice and this man is going to be in jail forever.
Totally.
Yeah, that's the only solace. It's not much, but it's something.
I can't even wrap my head around that.
I know. Something so minor. Like, how many times have you honked your horn at someone?
Oh my god, I need to stop doing that for this very reason.
Right?
Because people are unhinged. Yeah. You don't know who you're dealing with. People just become unhinged, unprovoked.
Yeah. People are nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Katie, do you have a terrible story for me today?
I have a very terrible story for you today. You, Liz, as well as our lovely listeners.
Well, I'm going to speak on behalf of our lovely listeners and say, let's hear it.
I will be telling you guys about the murder of Cassandra Pulliam Laney. Oh. I have a whopping single source today.
Wow.
The Republican American Archives.
Oh, okay.
On December 3rd, 1999, a construction worker was dropping off equipment at the Harper Leader Plating Factory on South Main Street in the south end of Waterbury, Connecticut. This is when he came across skeletal remains.
Oof.
The remains were located in a brick storage facility near the front of the factory.
Oh.
Medical examiners teamed up with an archaeologist to investigate the bones.
Wow.
They initially thought it was a drug overdose, but it was determined that the remains belonged to a female and that she was the victim of a homicide.
Oh.
They were only able to determine really those two things. They didn't know who this woman was, how she got there, how long she had been there, but it was very clear she was there for a while.
Yeah.
They immediately thought that it was at least many months, maybe even years.
Yeah.
But the factory itself was technically abandoned, so there weren't workers there going in and out regularly. Like, it was just a fluke that this guy happened to come across it when he did.
Wow.
The factory itself was there for plating parts with precious metals like gold and silver, but it went out of business soon after an incident where heavy metals like zinc, chromium, copper, and nickel spilled into the Naugatuck River in 1988.
Oh, wow.
It was a massive, like, chemical spill. It was really, like, chromium especially is really dangerous.
Yeah.
In a water source. So they shut that shit down pretty soon after.
Huh.
All while the investigation was ongoing, the skeletal remains were found in 1999, and they're still trying to figure out, even years later, who that person was.
Right.
The factory was demolished in 2011, in the middle of their investigation.
Who allowed that?
This was a huge obstacle, obviously, and it dashed any hopes of recovering any additional evidence, going back to the crime scene, looking around, demolished.
Jesus Christ.
Investigators had been able to put together a composite sketch using the woman's skull of what they thought that she looked like, and they released this in hopes of still identifying her.
Okay.
It turns out that police had received a missing persons report from a relative who had come across a description that seemed to fit the person the relative was looking for. As this relative was with police, filling out their missing persons report, they look over, see the composite sketch, and say, "Holy shit, that is who I'm reporting missing."
The fuck?
Her name is Cassandra Pulliam Laney.
What?
And I am her cousin. The identification took 16 years.
Oh my god. Wow.
Cassandra's cousin had last seen her in the late 1990s in Waterbury, Connecticut, and she had not seen or heard from her since.
Wow.
She was checking online diligently, going on Name Us, which is a national database for missing persons. We use it as a source quite often to try and find her.
Wow.
Cassandra was around 29 years old at the time of her murder, and she was a U.S. Army veteran.
Oh.
She struggled with substance abuse and drug addiction, most likely related to PTSD from her time in the military, which, not easy to be in the military.
No.
Not easy to be a woman in the military.
No.
And most certainly not easy to be a woman of color in the military.
Absolutely not.
But even knowing this, with her substance use history, police maintain. They're like, it was not an overdose. It was not related to her drug use. Mm-hmm. This was a homicide.
Oh, wow.
They have not released information on whether or not she was sexually assaulted.
Hmm.
Detective Richard Baxter, a veteran investigator who has been a huge part of solving other cases, is still hoping that someone will come forward with information about Cassandra's murder. Lieutenant Michael Slavin, head of the Detective Bureau, stated, quote, there are going to be a lot of challenges in this case. That's why we're pleading to the public. It was initially thought that Cassandra's murder was related to the murders of the victims of William Devin Howell, who we covered in our 41st episode. Because right around the time that they figured out her identity and who she was, they were coming across the first few bodies that William had murdered and hidden. And those were a lot of skeletal remains as well.
Yes.
It was very quickly determined that she was not one of his victims, and he was someone who admitted to everything. He was like, yeah, okay, you caught me.
Yeah.
You know, I killed this person. This is how I did it. And he didn't say anything about her. Like, she definitely was not related. So her case is really only half solved because we found out who she was, but we have no idea who murdered her, and it is beyond a shadow of a doubt a homicide.
Right.
Cassandra was added to the fourth edition of the Connecticut Cold Case deck of cards and is the Four of Hearts. Anyone with any information on the murder of Cassandra Pulliam Laney is asked to please call Detective Richard Baxter personally at 203-574-6941. You can also call the Confidential Crime Stoppers tip line at 203-755-1234. They have historically offered rewards for information leading to the arrest of those responsible. It's not clear if there's a reward specifically for this case, but they've historically offered money for tips that have been successful.
Wow. Great. That's crazy. What are the chances that that cousin is filling out that report and looks up and sees that sketch? Ugh. And it blows my mind that they can do that, even. Like those composite sketches out of skeletal remains.
Right? That was all the archaeologists. Like,
that's crazy.
What an incredible resource. You wouldn't think of that. Like, when I think of an archaeologist, I think of, and maybe this is really stereotypical, but I think of them, like, using a little brush and cleaning off a dinosaur femur or something Eureka, I found a discovery. Or like polishing a dinosaur footprint encased in dry mud. And
yes.
I don't think of them contributing to cold cases. So I think that's a phenomenal resource.
Absolutely. Wow. That poor woman. I wonder what happened. Ugh. That's terrible. Crazy. God, I hope they solve that, because I'd be so curious to know.
Right?
Obviously not just you know, because of justice, and I want her for her family and for her, but also just because I'm so curious.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like, and I wonder, like, when she died, and because there's such a big timeline of when it could have been. And obviously she had been dead for a while, if she was skeletal remains. Man, that's crazy.
Right. And there were years where that factory was abandoned.
Right.
And so, like, obviously, I feel like that would be the talk of the town, or, like, well-known, like, the abandoned factory.
Right.
And I'm surprised that more people wouldn't be going there to, like, trespass or urban explore.
Kids.
Or even just law enforcement patrolling. Like, sure. I would think that that would be an area to kind of keep an eye on.
Kids would go smoke there.
Absolutely.
Teenagers go fuck there, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People go take cool pictures, whatever. Graffiti. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Or go there and homeless. Do drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Homeless, etc. Like.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Crazy. Wow. I know.
That's nuts. Oh, that poor woman.
One article on that.
One article. Good find. Because that's very interesting. Wow. Crazy. That's a nuts case.
Wow.
And so, guys, that's just a little bit of what you can expect with these case profiles if you're not a regular listener. If you want to send us a case profile case of your own, you can find us on Instagram at truecrimene. You can send us an email at truecrimene@gmail.com. You can go to our website, truecrimene.com. Go to our handy-dandy submission tool. Send us an anonymous case if you want to. If you don't want to be linked to something for any reason, whether it's because you know someone or you're scared of retaliation, whatever, you can send us anything anonymously and we will happily do our very best to cover it. If we can't cover it, we make a little Instagram post and put it on our website as well. Whatever we can do to make sure that it is out there, we will do it. Always.
Absolutely. And no case is too small. Like, I just covered one with one source. We will make it work.
Absolutely.
Any way we can, any way we can get them out there, just send them our way and we will be the judge of what format we cover them. Mm-hmm. But regardless, they're going to be covered in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Bye.